Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. Two big pieces of news for you. As a celebration of our 400th and beyond set of shows, I'm going to have a limited edition set of t-shirts, Bullseye t-shirts available. If you're interested, please either email me at chicagobullseye@gmail.com and or direct message me on Twitter at CBEFred, at CBEFred. You can also go to Twitter and just search for C Red Fred. If you decide to buy one, it'd be greatly appreciated. It's going to go and upgrade in the show. We're going to have a few giveaways too. So we're looking forward to that. Hopefully something in the next 30, 60 days on that. Just in time for Christmas gifts that will greatly disappoint whoever you give it to. And then on also as another bit of news, I'm going to be on Bulls Outsiders on January 12th. All my buddies are on that show. You got to check that out after every Bulls game. It comes after the post-game show. But specifically, I'm going to be on January 12th, 2019, after the Utah game. Again, that's on NBC Sports Chicago Comcast. So please check that out on January 12th. I'll remind you as we get closer to that date. It's going to be my national television debut. But anyhow, hope you enjoy this, the latest edition of Chicago Bullseye. On to the special guest, Brad Squires, a.k.a. Buzz from the Outcasts podcast. You can I'll put their link in the podcast here and also on the website at chicagobullseye.com. So check them out. They do a great job. Buzz is a good buddy of mine, and I hope you enjoy listening to his extensive Bulls knowledge. We're going to have a big Heinrich debate, too, sometime in the next month or two. He's a big rabid Heinrich fan, and obviously those who know me know I'm not, and I'm sure we'll have an interesting conversation there. So all the best. Have a great weekend. Talk to you soon.
Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Fred on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Fred on the Chicago Bullseye.
Buzz, how you doing, brother? It's great to have you on Chicago Bullseye, your first guest appearance, and we're so looking forward to the chatting beloved with you.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you taking the time to bring me on the show. Cannot wait. I'm a long-time listener to the Bullseye, so I'm excited to be on it.
Oh man, thanks. Good to hear. We got 10 or 11 of those, so been around after, you know, a decade. We get a few of those, so it's a good time to chat about the Bulls, man. I don't know. I know I was pretty devastated after Monday's performance, but yesterday against Denver, Wednesday night game against Denver, I thought that's more what I wanted to see. Improvement from the young players. What's your impression on the team? Performance yesterday, impression overall. Where are we at?
Monday I was in your boat. I was physically ill after the performance the Bulls had. I thought it was honestly, I think it was probably one of the worst Bulls games I've ever watched in my entire life, and that goes back to the baby Bulls back in the day. You know, Monday, my opinion, I understand that Golden State is a powerhouse and the best team in the NBA by far, but what is very irritating to me is the fact that there was no adjustments made in game. Players looked lackadaisical. You're letting Klay Thompson come off screens, letting him hit shots, not following him. And I'm not saying hurt him, I'm not pulling a cap here. I'm just saying that, you know, he came coming off screens, shooting the ball. I mean, nobody in his face, just no adjustments by your head coach, no fire from the players. I was pretty upset after Monday's performance. Watching the game tape back from last night, Zach LaVine is proving to be exactly what he said he wanted to be, and playing up to his contract. I mean, 28-5-7, I believe his stat line was. You know, and then I got to give you all the credit in the world here. Wendell Carter Jr. was the most impressive part to me of last night's game, especially going up against Jokic.
Yeah, thanks for the pat on the back. I will take credit for that because I know I was on your show, going back to the summer now, pre-draft, and I just could not believe that there were people who thought there were better options than this guy at 7. It was just amazing to me. And, you know, there was really only one player, Jaren Jackson, I had ahead of him. I had 8 ahead of him. But I had him third, Wendell Carter Jr. And just everything he did, you know, just screamed, this guy's a winner. I mean, there was nothing, no fault in his game whatsoever. I didn't understand the people who were like, oh, he can't guard guards off a pick and roll. And I'm just like, first of all, there's probably about 4 big men in the league who can really stick with a 1. You know, that doesn't happen. Number 2, how can you tell that when Duke was in his zone, you know, all year because of Marvin Bagley Jr., who couldn't play any D? You know, to me, I just saw a guy who was clearly much better athletically than people gave him credit for, much better passer. And I'm just so glad to see. And you already heard it initially. You know, he didn't start off like a ball, like a, you know, a bowl of fire, and people were already starting to chirp. But three games in a row where he set a new career high, you're really starting to see everything that this guy has in his game. And to me, I'm really excited just because he can hit the three, and I think he's going to be an elite interior defender. And that's one aspect that you need, interior defense, for every championship contender. You know, what say you?
Oh, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, it seems like through the first couple games, he was getting a lot of hate from doubt from a lot of Bulls Nation. You know, the fact that he was not, you know, the numbers weren't flashy.
Yes.
A lot of early foul trouble. You know, but that comes with the territory of being a 19-year-old big man in this league, too. And especially a 19-year-old physical big man in this league that plays defense. You're going to see that happen. I'm super happy with him keeping his confidence. You know, hitting his little midi last night was one of my favorite parts. You know, he has that mid-range game that you talked about on the show when you came on the Outcast with us. You talked about his mid-range game, and it was easy to see that he was overshadowed by Marvin Bagley in college when they were at Duke together. But I mean, in the games that Bagley didn't play, like you said before, he shined. And I'll tell you what, I think Zach LaVine's got a good running mate, you know, offensively. And I mean, just for right now, if Wendell Carter can stay consistent and stay confident, I mean, we still have Lowry Markkanen coming back, and, you know, Dunn and D's, you know, Denzel Valentine will be back as well. So that's the one thing I do. I think the team's defense will improve once our starters get back healthy and once, you know, Denzel comes back. And
Dunn.
You know,
Dunn's our best defender. As soon as he comes back, it's going to exponentially improve the defense. Now you got a guy in the perimeter, Dunn, who can stick guys. And, you know, what happened with, just my opinion, but what happened with Klay Thompson the other night would not have happened if Dunn was on the court. You could have moved him over to guard him. He would have done a fine job on him. He's big enough to handle a guy like that and long enough. Whereas LaVine, you know, that's not his forte. And yeah, Klay Thompson was 6-for-6 with LaVine on him. I thought, you're right, you kind of touched on this. I thought the head coach should have made an adjustment there, put Hutchinson on him, or put a longer defender, a bigger defender on him. It just, no reaction to it, just, you know, staring at the into space. And last night, I thought, too, coach failed. With Ryan's done a fine job. I used to call him Ryan Archer, not in the NBA. He obviously is good enough to play in the NBA. But he had him taking the ball out of bounds on three consecutive out-of-bounds plays. And finally, on the last one, he put Jokic on him, on the ball, just jumping up and down. And there was 0.1 seconds left. You had to have a play like within 4 or 5 feet of the rim. You got to have a bigger guy taking the ball out of bounds. He couldn't throw over him.
And well, I agree exactly with that wholeheartedly. I mean, that's day one stuff. I mean, you have your guard here. You call a timeout, do something, you know, because having Jokic on Archie, I mean, it doesn't make sense. It's going to cause a forced pass because Ryan can't see over this guy.
Yes.
Jokic is a mountain of a man. I mean, in general. So people are going to have a hard time seeing over him in general. But I mean, to the fact that Fred thought that was a good idea, whether or not he's the best passer on the court, that remains to be seen. When you have a 6'11 guy on like a 6'2 dude, 6'1, I mean, he's going to have a hard time trying to get the ball into play. And it was a forced pass. And I mean, not that it would have turned into a win anyway, but, you know, with 0.1 left. But I mean, it's just, Fred makes a lot of decisions to me, especially watching this year, where I was like, you know, I was going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I was going to ride with it. You know, when we did the round table, I was like, I'll ride with it through the year. See, you know, give him a roster that fits his play style. And then all of these injuries happen. So then I start giving him like the benefit of the doubt even more. But now what I'm noticing while I'm actually watching him coach is that he just makes no in-game adjustments. So who cares if his team's healthy? Because if someone's getting torched, he's just going to ride with what he has. And that's the difference between a good coach and an elite coach. And I don't even think Fred's a good coach right now. I think that, I mean, Fred's a nice guy. I have no problems with Fred Hoiberg as a human being, as a person. But I know this sounds terrible, but if I did my job the way Fred was doing his job, I'd get fired.
No doubt. Yeah, the guy's just not a leader of men. I think he's a smart basketball guy. Don't get me wrong. I know he understands the game. I know he knows what he's doing in terms of offensive strategy and defensive strategy. I'm sure he has all the X's and O's covered. But number one, as far as leading men, he doesn't inspire greatness. I think it's a huge fault not to work the officials. I think if you're, you know, smart enough, like Brad over at Stevens over with the Celtics, to, you know, still be respectful, that's fine. Fred's not smart enough. He's not at that level. So you better work the officials, especially when you have a young team and you consistently get these horrible rookie calls on Hutchinson. You get the horrible rookie calls on Wendell Carter Jr. And you see these guys frustrated. You have to protect your players. As a player, that's the most frustrating thing in the world, is getting bad calls called on you and not having your coach back you up. So that's number one. Number two,
I
do have to say, I don't think he makes correct decisions on who should be starting, who should be. It goes back, and people will say, oh, yeah, because you're such a Parker lover, and I do feel Parker should have been starting. I thought that was an insane move to put the 196-pound Hutchinson at the four in a position. It's tough enough as a rookie. To put him in a position he's never really played, to me, is absolutely insane. You just put Parker there and then run with that, and then have Blakeney be the guy off the bench. That said, I mean, he makes these crazy decisions on who gets playing time, continually playing guys I don't think who deserve it. He went with Zipser 2 years ago, far too much. At the three, when I thought he had other options in Valentine. And then, you know, last year, he again zips her until his play suffered so poorly they didn't even have a choice. And then this year, just continual play of Holiday. I'll never understand why that guy gets so much run. But anyhow, I am glad to see that he's finally given Wendell Carter Jr., you know, more than 20 minutes a game. He was playing 18 minutes a game. Play that guy 35-plus, and let's run with this.
Right. So you see, I agree. Going back to what you just said is something that Juice Man and I were talking about. Wendell Carter Jr. getting all those early foul calls and Fred just sitting on the bench with the blank stare in his face is something that always kind of irritated me.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that it irritated me is because if you're not fighting for him, be like, hey, man, that's not a foul call. Like, obviously, you're going to stick up for your players. I get that. But if it's not a foul call or if it is a foul call, Fred should still be standing up and keeping Wendell's confidence up. Be like,
yes.
No, keep playing aggressive. Keep playing hard. Keep doing what you're doing instead of just looking down and substituting him out right away. That's my problem with Fred on that aspect. I don't think Fred might be a great basketball mind, but he was in the front office before, and I believe he was in analytics. So, I mean, if he's good with all the analytics and stuff like that when he was a front office role for Minnesota or whatever he was doing before, I don't really know if that translates over on dealing with, like you said, grown men. So that's a big problem that I have with Fred. Another problem that I have with Fred is what you said before. I was on the Twitter war with you guys between, you know, Keith, yourself, and me. I was in there a little bit. I didn't think we should start Chandler Hutchinson. I thought we should start Jabari Parker.
Yes.
And I'm not, you know, a Jabari lover by any means necessary. It's awesome. He's from Chicago. I love that. That's cool. It's nostalgic. It's, you know, he's back. That's neat. But I'm all about who's going to help my team win games, you know, and Chandler Hutchinson, we don't really know what his game is yet because he's so fresh and so brand new. He was a 22nd pick out of Boise. Not a lot of NBA playing time. And we're going to start him at the four?
Yeah.
And he's undersized? It made no sense to me. He might be a good perimeter defender, but Draymond's not a big four either, and Draymond would have pushed him around.
Yeah,
you know
he's
30
pounds
heavier.
Well, yeah,
right.
But the whole point I was trying to make with Keith, and I don't know if I did a really good job of stressing it, it's not about Jabari Parker. It's about Hutch. It's about Chandler Hutchinson. The guy, you don't put your young players in a position where they're going to fail, and that's exactly what Fred did. And I think since he's gone back to the three, he's had two really nice games. He was playing well before at the three. That's what he should be. And then to ask him to play defense against guys that have 20, 30, 40 pounds on him is ridiculous. And all you're going to do is put him into foul trouble within 5 minutes. That's what was happening. And it's because teams were attacking him. And it's just ridiculous to do, to put your young player in a position like that where he's uncomfortable enough starting out in the NBA. You want to put your young guys, not even your young guys, all your guys in positions to succeed. That's the problem I had with bringing Portis in to the starting lineup as opposed to Parker in the beginning, is because you already had a guy in Bobby Portis who embraced the six-man role. He got quotes galore this last summer. I want to be six-man in a year. I love the six-man. Basically saying, I want to be that guy off the bench. And you take
right.
out Parker after a few bad preseason games. You created a controversy you didn't need. Now Parker's checked out. He wanted to start. He's in a contract year. You know, it's just a ridiculous thing to do that you didn't need, especially when you, over, you know, two or three preseason games you make that decision. And I understand some people say, well, what about practice too? Yeah, I get all that.
My bigger point is there's no doubt that Parker's a better three-point shooter than Portis. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, there may be doubts in other people's mind, that Parker's a better passer than Portis. That's what you want with LaVine. That was to seem to be the counter-argument is, well, no, you got to have Portis with LaVine. No, you don't. No, you don't.
Why would anyone say that? That makes no sense. Listen, you want, in my mind, in this new NBA, you want as many players as you possibly can to be able to bring the ball up the floor. All right?
Yeah.
You know, you want people to be able to create, not just for themselves, but for others as well. That's my opinion. That is everybody on Golden State's roster. Everybody. So if that's the mold I have to go after, that's what I'm going to do. So hypothetically, we stayed healthy. You have Dunn who can bring the ball up the floor. You have Zach who can bring up the ball up the floor. If Jabari was at the three, Jabari can bring the ball up the floor. Lowry, you saw him do it last year quite a few times, bring the ball up the floor. Wendell Carter Jr., that kid's got handles for being a big kid.
Yes,
you know?
No doubt.
That's five players in your starting lineup that can bring the ball up the floor. Five players can't bring the ball up the floor.
No.
That's one thing. So I don't understand the notion that him and Zach can play well together. I don't understand that notion. I understand the concerns with Zach and Jabari playing together because they're neither of them are very good at defense. But
either's Portis. That's the problem.
Seem to be. What was that?
That's the problem. Either's Portis. The delta between Parker and Portis, and we could argue about this all day. I made this point, and I firmly believe it. I'd rather see Parker play defense and Portis on defense. I saw more great defense from Parker in the series last year against Milwaukee and Boston than I saw from Bobby Portis in his entire career. Bobby Portis is not a good defender.
Bobby Portis's defensive rating, it's not very good.
No, he's not a good defender. He's just not. Either is Parker. It's kind of like a battle between two awful. You know, I understand that Portis is a good rebounder, but that's my point. So's Parker. Parker's a good rebounder too. They both do that really well. I just feel he's a little bit better answer, Parker, than Portis, just to start. And I don't know. He created a problem, obviously. Now in only two wins we've had, Parker and LaVine have played well together in the last 5 minutes of a game. You know, we've kind of gone in. That's why I don't know if you feel this way. I don't even want to deal with it next year. I think Parker should just find a better opportunity. I think it's pretty clear he doesn't fit in with this team. You know, I just don't have the argument anymore.
It's unfortunate. I have to agree with you, but I mean, I don't agree. Like, I agree with you, but my thoughts on it are a little different. I feel like Jabari was told, it's a Joakim Noah thing from a few years ago, when Fred told Joakim Noah, hey, you know, you're going to come off the bench, and Joe said it was cool, and then Joakim Noah's like, what? I mean, it's the same thing where controversy didn't need to happen, and then it happened, and you kind of saw Jabari check out.
I agree. Yeah, we're simpatico like Jabari on this, man. I totally agree with you on this.
I'd like to see Jabari, you know, I want to see what he could do, you know, like, that's the thing, like, coming off his injuries, he's a hell of a scorer. I want to see what he can do, but I don't think we're going to be able to see what he can do with Fred Hoiberg holding the reins. And I would like to see Jabari be successful. So if that means him leaving and going somewhere else to get a better opportunity, I'm cool with it. But I am feeling that us as Chicago Bulls fans are kind of being robbed of what he can do because he's limited by his coach.
Yeah, I mean, in defense of Fred, I think he's done some things in the limited amount of time where he has played him at this point forward position where he's kind of taking the ball up the court, and I think he does that very well. I think he's an underrated passer in transition. I think he's thown many great passes so far in this young season. So in fairness of Fred, I'd say that there. To me, just the bigger issue is that he seems, I'm not going to play him at the three no matter what, and I disagree. The fact is, for the first years of his career in Milwaukee, he played about one-third of his time to one-fourth of his time at the three. And I think you can get away with putting him at the three against certain matchups. I just feel that way. There's some guys in the league that there shouldn't be a problem with him getting some time at the three. Seti Osman is the small forward for Cleveland Cavaliers. Do you really feel like Parker's going to have a horrible time guarding him? I don't. You know what I mean?
You can
go up and down the league. There's guys all over the place that, you know, Bogdanovich in Indiana, in that matchup, Doug McDermott's the backup small forward for Indiana Pacers. Are you really worried about Parker at the three? You know, come on.
Absolutely not. Just like I'm not concerned with, you know, Stanley Johnson over in Detroit, you know. Like,
bingo. Amen. It's
the same thing. I mean, it's just, like I said, I know that, you know, you're saying that Fred, you know, I'm not, like I told you in the beginning, I'm not I don't want to hate on him, and I know I seem like I've been hating on him this whole entire time. Maybe my true feelings are coming out, I don't know. But I don't feel that it's productive to say we're not going to play him at the three. He's going to come off the bench, and we're just going to be this open with the media. And you see Jabari, how he's handling it, but the team's holding firm. You're killing their confidence. You're killing, you know, any sort of chemistry that you can somewhat build. I mean, it's just – that's just my opinion with it, man. I feel that, you know, now we're, if Fred's so stuck in this mindset and the team fully gets healthy, are we not going to see Jabari start at the three from what we all thought the starting lineup was going to be in the beginning of the season with Dunn, Levine, Parker, Markkanen, and Carter Jr.? I mean, are we not going to see that? Are we going to keep putting Justin Holiday in there, who's literally just a ball stopper? Which
he's terrible. I mean, yeah, I know he had a couple big threes the other night. And, you know, overall, I just think the guy is – I don't think – the biggest thing I differ with most people on is his level of defense. I think he's a horrible defender. So
he's not better than Denzel Valentine, and no way. Who should be backing it up. And that's my honest-to-God opinion.
I hope Valentine gets to start at three. So that's an interesting question. Let's get into that. When these guys get healthy in 4 weeks, I'm a firm belief that, you know, to me, the worst thing about this whole situation with the injuries is that it's kind of delayed the inevitable greatness that's going to be our front court for the next 10 years. I wanted Laurie and Wendell Carter Jr. to build this kind of seamless cohesion. I think both their games complement each other very, very well. And I want those two guys to play together as much as possible. And, you know, that's what's been delayed here. But I have no doubt those two are going to be the best front court in the NBA for the next 10 years. So that's been delayed. But what's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen when all four of these guys come back? Our best player overall, Laurie, our best defender, Dunn. Valentine, our best three-point shooter last year, and then obviously our best sixth man, Bobby Portis. What do you think the situation is going to be at that point?
I mean, starting-wise or just team-wise?
Yeah. I think starting-wise is pretty obvious. It's going to be Laurie, Wendell Carter Jr., Dunn at the one, and then obviously at the two we're going to have our Zach LaVine. But who's going to be the three?
I mean, that depends on how the season goes this year, who's going to be, you know, who comes in at the three. I mean, think about it. If we end up with a top five pick and you have, like, your RJ Barrett, your Nazir Littles, your Cameron Radishes in this draft, and I'm a huge high school basketball nut. So, like, I mean, obviously I'm not going to make my judgment calls and say that these guys are going to be the truth until I start seeing some college basketball played.
Yeah.
But those guys are very, very talented. And then the it goes with Bobby, too. I mean, he's going to be a restricted free agent. He'll still be on the team. I think that you see, but, I mean, next year I do think that Denzel Valentine's inserted in the starting lineup unless we make a splash, you know, for the three position. Because I do feel that four of our five positions are solidified right now. I mean, and people do not like Chris Dunn. I don't understand why. People say he's not the point guard of the future. I don't get it. I think he can be. I think he's a very good defender. I think that he can score. I think he can get to the rim. And he's improving on his jump shot. He's young. I understand that he's, you know, 25, but he came out of Pravi as a senior, you know?
Yes. He's still NBA young. That's so, his biggest issue is just the carelessness with the ball. And as soon as he fixes that, he's going to be awesome.
It comes with time.
Yeah, agreed. It takes a while for that position. So I'm not as worried about him either. I'm going to be very interested to see who starts at the three. I think Valentine's a better answer. I think Parker's a better answer than Holiday, but I know I'm on an island on that one. But if he continues with this Holiday at the three, regardless of whoever starts, the fact is the team's going to be, in my opinion, a playoff-worthy team in the East. It's just a matter of are they going to be able to overcome this massive hole. It's going to look just like last year. Well, we're going to be close. I don't think we're going to be 3-20. I think we'll be a little bit better than that. But when the guys come back, we're going to be a good team. A team at least that's going to be playing at a 500 pace, maybe a little bit better than that, and that should challenge for the eighth playoff spot in an awful East.
Well, I hope so, Fred. I hope so. You know, depending on when these guys come back from injury, and then not only them coming back from injury, but then building on-court chemistry again during the regular season. I'd like to see the team make the playoffs this year. I don't see it. I don't see it with all these injuries that happened. And then, you know, not just the injuries, but, you know, the questioning of the head coach with, you know, Zach LaVine questioning him already this year, Jabari, all that stuff. I just think that this team is going to fall short of what our expectations were in the beginning of the season, but I feel that there was a lot of factors that played into that. Again, injuries, coaching decisions, you know, I don't know, man. I can't see us making the eighth seed this year. I just don't see it happening.
How big are you on some of these prospects? Are you pretty knowledgeable on the top college prospects for next year's draft?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, for who I'm looking for?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been...
Let's say you get a top four pick. Top four pick, who would you want to see in this team next year?
All right, so, like, if I'm going to go off pure potential and based off pure potential, I'm thinking I'm going after Cameron Reddish. 6'7", he could play the shooting guard, he could play the small forward, he's a hell of a defender, and the kid could score.
And he's at Duke, right?
Yes.
What about Zion Williamson, who I think is a four? Correct me if I'm wrong, which obviously doesn't fit really well with us, but you keep on hearing about his, you keep on hearing his name and just the level of talent that he has. Do you feel like that would be a good addition?
He's a freak athletically, Fred, don't get me wrong, but we're going to end up in the same position we're talking about with Jabari Parker right now. What is he? He's not tall enough to play four. He's a tank. He's athletic, but he can't really shoot. You know, he doesn't have a good shooting stroke. So, with, you know, he's going to have to learn how to do that. And, you know, they say the greats learn, but how I look at him now is his game is based off athleticism and toughness. So, yeah, would that fit with the Bulls? Yeah, but I don't know at what position, because if people are clamoring for him to be at the three, that's completely hypocritical of them, because they don't want Jabari at the three.
Who else do you like?
And Jabari.
Anyone else?
I like Nazir Little. I like RJ Barrett. You know, there's a lot of players that are... You know, that Duke squad is going to be nuts this year. It's going to be insane. That's my pick, my way too early pick to win the whole thing if they all stay healthy together.
Yeah.
But, I mean, those are the threes that I've been really, really scouting and you know, doing my research on. So I would like to see either, you know, a Reddish, a Langford. I mean, even Zion, that wouldn't be too bad. A Nazir Little, I'd like to see one of those guys. But,
yeah.
You know, who knows how it goes. I mean, you know. They have a center that's supposed to be coming out, too, in Bol Bol. I don't know if you've ever heard about him.
Is that Manute Bol's son? I did hear about him. Yeah, then I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he's a freak, dude. Yeah. He can shoot. Yeah. He can defend. I mean, he's skinny as hell, but kind of like your buddy Mo Bamba, but a little bit more polished offensively.
My buddy. Yeah, he's definitely Mo's you know, struggling some nights. He's having better than I expected nights. Probably overall, it'll be slightly better than the bust I expected him to be. So that's good news for everyone who fell in love with him. I thank God every day we took Wendell Carter Jr. and we're not the Orlando Magic. So I'd like to get your take too before we wrap this up, man. Thanks for jumping on with the Bullseye. Two more quick things. I'd like to get your opinion on Rose scoring 50. The other night. Love to get your take on the whole situation. I think you're in my camp as a Rose fan. I think you were open to my suggestion that I basically got laughed out of the party I was at when I said, you know what, I think I want Rose to come back next year just in time for us to, you know, go for our seventh title as a backup point guard.
So, as far as Derrick Rose coming back, if he came back in the sixth man capability, I'm totally all for that.
Yep.
His 50-point performance last night, Fred, I tell you, I'd be lying to you if I told you I didn't tear up a little bit. You know, especially seeing his reaction, not because we don't have him anymore, but just seeing his reaction to what he did. You know, I'm a huge Derrick Rose fan. Down here, we call our studio that we record in the Buzz Cave. You know, we do it at my house. And there's Derrick Rose signed memorabilia everywhere, jerseys hanging up, you know, the whole nine. I was super happy to see what he did last night, and I would open arms welcome him and Noah back to the team next year in any capacity, if it's obviously bench work, just to help mentor the young guys that we have and help, you know, teach them about what the city of Chicago, you know, what basketball means in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, the Noah moment the other night, too, you just reminded me with that, was absolutely awesome. One of the only good things that happened on Monday night. And I feel very similar about Rose. I mean, obviously he's a complex figure in Chicago for some reason. I'm extremely grateful for the years that he was healthy, and I feel that, you know, that ACL tear, I mean, just talk about one of the worst things ever happened in Chicago sports history, that whole situation.
That was terrible. Derrick Rose is, like you said, he's a complex guy. He's a human being, man, and, you know, he's very hard on himself, you know, very, very hard on himself. And I kind of like, he's very relatable in that way. Cause you know, in my life, I'm very hard on myself. I want to succeed. I want to be, you know, I want to do all the right things. I want to be appreciated. I don't really necessarily care if I'm loved, but I, you know, I would like to be appreciated and respected, you know, and I feel like Derek feels that way. So I think, you know, last night was a good redemption story for Derek Rose to show the world that he could still light up a scoreboard and he could still carry a team to victory. And, you know, I loved seeing every second of it. The only part of last night I didn't like is when Derek was standing at the podium, or sitting at the podium, I'm sorry, during his press conference, and of course Jimmy Butler had to come in and steal the spotlight and start screaming in the background.
You know? You got to be kidding. How did I miss this? Yeah, I was going
to
ask you. That was my next question. I was wondering, I wonder what that guy was thinking when that was going down. You know, guy was taking off for soreness. You know, obviously as a message, I want out of here. You know, what did you think about that whole situation with Jimmy Butler? Where that's gone?
As far as Jimmy Butler goes, I mean, this is something that I was clamoring for in last year's draft. I mean, and I'm not even going to lie to you, Fred, but I was a huge Jimmy, but like I told you, I love college basketball. So when we drafted Jimmy at 30 in 2011, I was like, okay, this kid's a good defender. He's a good defender, and he's got a decent jump shot. It was kind of a line drive jump shot at the time, but he got some air under it. Changed his shotting, you know, his shot form, got his elbow a little bit more in, a little better of a flick of the wrist, and he became a pretty decent shooter. Watching him preseason with the Bulls and, you know, going on throughout his time with the Bulls, I saw him getting better. And something that I always make fun of my friends about is I called him. They always made fun of him because he loved country music, and they would always rip on him because I said that he was going to be an all-star. And they were like, no, he's not going to be an all-star. I'm like, okay, you saw what happened.
Yeah.
When Chris Dunn was coming out of the draft, I don't know if you remember, but it was a supposed rumored trade that the Bulls were thinking about trading him that year to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I was all for it, and I'm glad that we waited. It's actually, you know, kudos to guard packs because we got a lot more out of the haul.
I know. That's rarely talked about. I know exactly what you're saying. There was a lot of clamor for to just do the trade for Dunn at the time and LaVine, which would have been a disaster in retrospect because we were able to garner Lowry out of it by waiting a year. But go on.
Right. So, I mean, you know, when we traded him, I was all happy. I ain't going to lie to you. I was ecstatic. I understood. We picked a lane. We're going in a direction. No more Rondo. No more Wade. No more just, you know, bringing players in to say, oh, look, they won before, so we might win now. No, we're going to pick a direction. We're going to go. What he's done in Minnesota completely solidifies in my mind that the Chicago Bulls won that trade. I wrote an article for it on Sports Mockery. I'm just glad that he's out of our hair. And last night, it might have been a fun thing between those two. I don't know Derek personally. I don't know Jimmy personally. But it just put a I had to chuckle that he's sitting out for general soreness. You're seeing the reports coming out from Woj. You're seeing the reports coming out from The Athletic that he's taking the next step in trying to get traded. He's going to start sitting out games. He's not going to travel with the team. And then Derek goes off and wins the game, and here comes Jimmy to steal a spotlight. Good riddance.
Yeah, amen. Agree with you 100%. Agree with you 100%. It's not to diminish what Jimmy did here, you know, becoming a great player, but it's just clear the guy has no idea what leadership is about. And I thought there was a subtle little shot in there from Rose after the game. You know, he didn't go out and say it, and he probably didn't even mean it, but he specifically said, I want to lead by example. And that's how you lead.
Right.
You know, you don't lead by talking and denigrating your teammates' work ethic, especially in the press, which is the worst thing you could possibly do in any line of work. So, brother, love to have you on the Bullseye. We got to do it again soon, man. Where can we find you? Tell us all the places where we can check out your podcast, on Twitter, etc. Where are you at?
All right, so on Twitter, you can follow me at SMBuzzweed. You can follow my co-host as well, at SMJuiceMan, and then more importantly, at SMOutcast. That's our podcast Twitter page. We are almost to 1,000 followers. Once we hit 1,000 followers, we'll be doing a free jersey giveaway of the lucky winner's choosing. I write for SportsMockery.com, so be sure to check out SportsMockery.com. Those are all the places you can find me. I'm only active on Twitter. I don't have Instagram or anything like that, so... And be sure to check out Chicago Bullseye because it's one of my favorite Bulls podcasts. So if you don't check that out, you're missing out.
You're the best, brother. I tell you, in the next 30 or 60 days, we're going to have a debate, a round table. We're going to have another Sea Red Fred in the Knights of the round table, round ball table. I want to get you.
Looking forward to it. I love that.
Our friend from Australia and myself and my old buddy Mark Lewenthal, and we're going to do two guys for Heinrich, two guys against Heinrich. I think we can argue. Well, you might want to argue that we retire his jersey. Do you believe his jersey should be retired?
Oh, and the first one, I said it should be.
Oh my God! So that'll be that's what we'll debate. We're going to have a knockout dragout around Kirk Heinrich.
I'll lose half my followers.
But let's do it. Let's definitely do it. Because I will. I'm ready for this one, man. I've never been more ready for an argument. All right, brother. Take it easy, bud.
Making me a little nervous, man.
Take it easy, bud. Hey, man. Right. Always good talking to you. Have a good day. And looking forward to having you on again soon.
Yeah, Fred. Have a good night, man. I appreciate everything. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later, brother.